Korach doesn't get any easier as the years go by. There's plenty to learn, and as hopefully we should see, the lessons of Korach do not stay in Parshas Korach. And actually, the discussion begins as soon as Korach is introduced. In Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, Vayikach Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kehos, Ben Levi. So the first person to be mentioned in the Parsha is Korach, son of Yitzhar, son of Kehos, son of Levi. And then the Pasuk goes on to present his partners of sorts, Dathan and Aviram, etc., and so forth. And there's already room for comment with the way that Korach is presented. He's called Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kehos, Ben Levi. He's traced back until Levi. And Rashi, and his source is actually in the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Kuftes, asks an interesting question. Why stop there? If you're tracing it back to Levi, so keep going. Levi Ben Yaakov. Rashi quotes this and says as follows. Below Hizkiu Ben Yaakov. The Pasuk doesn't mention that he's ascended from Yaakov. Shebikesh Rachamim al Atzmo. Yaakov has been davening on a certain level. Shelo Yizokhe Shemo Amachlokosa. That he shouldn't be mentioned in conjunction with this machlokas. It's an interesting question. How much of this machlokas does Yaakov know about? On what level does he know about it? I mean, has he learned Parshas Korach? One always wonders, maybe he should have told them to avoid it instead of cutting himself out of it. Presumably, the understanding is that Yaakov recognizes a certain tendency. And he wishes to say that he's not associated with that. In his bracha to Shimon and Levi, he says, Uve kahalam al teichad kavodi. I do not wish to be connected with kahalam, which is Korach, vayi kahalu al Moshe va'al Aaron. And that's a well-known comment of Rashi. Yaakov has said, mecheni nomi sifracha. He doesn't want to be connected to this. The second half of Rashi, interestingly, there's a good happy ending, so to speak. Veheichan nizkar shemo al Korach. And where is Yaakov's name connected with Korach? Anywhere? Yes. Bis yachasam al haduchan, v'divrei hayomim. In Sefer Divrei Hayomim, which kind of goes over everything, there, where it gives us the lineage, as it describes the Bnei Levi who survived, pardon me, Bnei Korach who survived, went on to great things. They're co-authors of Sefer Tehillim, as it says. This is in Divrei Hayomim Aleph. Perek Vav, Ben Avi Asaf, Ben Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kehos, Ben Levi, Ben Yisrael. Finally, Yaakov is connected with Korach. And the Mefarshim ponder with regards to this Rashi. And again, Lo al Rashi Telu Nosam. It's not a question on Rashi, it's a question on the Gemara. Rashi's merely quoting the Gemara. What exactly is behind the question? Why does the Pasuk not connect him back to Yaakov? One would rather think that the question is the opposite. In other words, why is it connecting him back so far? We would have expected that the Pasuk should say, Vayikach Korach ben Kehos. Ben Yitzhar ben Kehos. We know who Kehos is. He's been counted already in Chumash Bamidbar. He's been mentioned. We know who Kehos is. So on the contrary, while the Gemara is wondering how come it didn't mention Yaakov, we should be asking why it did go back as far as it did to mention Levi. To paraphrase Rashi in Parshas Yisro, Ala Rishonim Anu Mitztarim. Vatabal Lehosef Aleim, we're bothered about the original ones. No need to add more, or in this case, Ala Charonim Anu Mitztarim. You don't need to go back further up. One kind of gets a feeling that is summed up with the classic modern Hebrew expression, im kvar, az kvar. If already you're going, so then keep on going. That's the phrase that normally takes the second half of people's budget. Im kvar. If you've already done the kitchen cabinet, so we may as well do the whole house. So if you've already taken it back to Levi, so keep going. Why not? Why stop a good thing? But clearly there's every word in the Torah is measured, and we should be bothered why we came back as far as Levi in the first place. And secondly, really the question is, what is achieved by not mentioning Yaakov here? If you mentioned Yaakov, then it's Korach is clearly the son of Levi, who's the son of Yaakov. He's still the son of Yaakov, even if it's not in the Pasuk. Even if we close our eyes, Korach is still descended from Levi, and Levi will always be the son of Yaakov. So what is achieved by deleting his name from this parsha? Now, with reference to the question as to why we would expect the Pasuk to go back to Yaakov, some of our Shem say, well, on the contrary, the basis for doing so is the Pasuk in Divrei HaYomim, where you see that it does take him back all the way back to Yaakov. Apparently, that's the standard. That's the norm, which means we should have gone back to Yaakov here in order to maintain that symmetry, maintain that consistency. But if one looks in Divrei HaYomim, one will actually see that tracing those descendants all the way back to Yaakov is not the norm. It's the deviation from the norm, even in Divrei HaYomim. The other sons of Levi, namely Gershon and Merari, their descendants are brought back to Bnei Gershon, Bnei Levi, and that's it. That is the case with Gershon, that's the case with Merari, they're always taken back to Levi, and no more. There, in Divrei HaYomim, Kehas breaks with the norm. And it goes back to Kehas, Ben Levi, Ben Yisrael. So on the contrary, one can hardly look at the Pasuk of Divrei HaYomim as bearing the standard for how these things should be. It's an anomaly even there. And the question thus returns, why would we expect the Pasuk here to bring it back to Yaakov? With regards to the motivation of Korach, what got the whole Machlokas going? So the Gemara says, pardon me, the Medrash, and Rashi quotes it, that although Korach doesn't talk about it, there's more to what Korach wants than meets the eye. He talks about priesthood, he talks about kahuna, he talks about avoda, etc. But actually he wants something else. Rashi comments, Niskane benesius shel elitzofan benuzia. He was jealous that his cousin, Elzaphan, became the Nasi, Nasi of the family of Kehas, not the Nasi of Levi, Nasi of the family of Kehas. Everything counts. Korach reasoned. The older generation had four brothers, Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, and Uziel. Amram was taken up by Moshe and Aaron, says Korach, no complaints. But who's next? Yitzhar. I'm the son of Yitzhar. I was overlooked, and the son of Elzaphan, who's the youngest brother, he became the Nasi. That got Korach very worked up, and that sparked the Machlokas. Once the Machlokas began, it took on a very different form, as often happens in the case of Machlokas. The slogans of Korach and the platform of Korach was not the will of Korach. They're two separate things. Korach felt if he's able to overturn the positions of Avoda and of Kahuna, so in the ensuing mayhem and rubble, he will step in and take up the Messias of the family of Kahas. The question is, which is an interesting Shaila, how do we know that there's more to Korach than what he says? Is it not possible that he wants the avoda just like everyone else? The 250 men certainly did want the avoda. Korach presents himself like them. So what is it that tips us off that actually Korach is motivated by something else entirely? For him, it's devious. And essentially untruthful to talk about the kahuna. Maybe he wants the kahuna like everyone else. Now we can see how Korach ends up, perhaps. One could say, Sof maaseh b'machshava tchila. If you look at the end of Korach, and perhaps then you can see that it was unholy desires from the outset. But I came across a stunning chiddush today in the writings of Rav Leib Hyman Zatzal, the Rav of Beit Knesset Agra in Beit Vegan, and he has certain ways of looking at things which are very stimulating. And he explains that actually the notion, I say again, it's a chiddush, just to brace yourselves, that the notion that somehow Korach is acting in a devious way is embedded in the way that he's originally presented. Because the Torah departs from the norm and introduces him as Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kehas, Ben Levi. That's already too much. It would be enough to say Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kehas. We know who Kehas is. But the Torah says, no, he's also the son of Levi. Now, when the Torah introduces someone as being descended from someone else, who we don't need to be told that, what it means is somehow they are taking up the legacy or the method, the traits of that person. And let us consider, says Rav Hyman, where do we see Levi first express himself? And the answer, very interestingly, is with deception. The first time Levi is active is in the episode with Dinah and Shechem, where Shechem did what he did, the brothers are all very upset, and Shimon and Levi, they take action. And it begins, actually, by deceiving the people of Shechem, and, it should be noted, also by deceiving Yaakov. The Pasuk says, Dinah's brothers answered, Bemirma, Bemirma, with deceit. What did they say? They said, listen, you know, it's Pasnish, you need to undergo Mila, and then we can talk about it. And the people of Shechem thought, great, this will work. Even Yaakov, who knew that they didn't want Dinah to marry Shechem, thought that the goal or the effect of the Mila would be at least to incapacitate them so they could go in and take Dinah out. That was all. He did not expect them to go in and take the entire town out. And therefore, and Shimon and Levi, as we know, Ish Chabo, they were very active there. And this is, in a sense, using the midah of Mirma. Now, it's true. Shimon and Levi used this midah for a positive goal. They were looking out for their sister. Korach has taken on the midah of Mirma, has taken on, in a sense, the midah of Levi, but he has twisted it, whereby it's no longer for noble means. And that's a problem with a midah like deceit. It can begin for noble means. It's very easy for it to get out of hand. And therefore, as the Pasuk tells us that Korach is descended all the way back to Levi, it's saying there's an element of Levi here. Be careful, because what Korach says is not necessarily what he means. It's not something Levi would be proud of, but it's something that Levi started. That's very interesting. And moreover, if we've come this far, here with trepidation, it will breed another question. Namely, did Mirma really begin with Levi? Was he the first one to act deceitfully? Well, the first time the word Mirma exists in the Torah is when Yitzchak tells Esav about his brother Yaakov, Ba achicha b'mirma, vayikach b'chasecha. The first one to act with deceit is Yaakov. And therefore the Gemara cautiously says, if we're tracing the midah of Korach, which of course was perverted beyond recognition, but if you're looking for its roots, why do you say its roots are Levi? Why not say Ben Yaakov? That's what's behind the question of the Gemara. Isn't he the one that started or introduced that midah? It's quite a thing to say. And the answer of the Gemara is no. There is no connection whatsoever between the mirmer of Yaakov and the mirmer of Korach, and to a certain degree, even between Yaakov and Levi. Yaakov is using the midah of deceit at the behest of his mother, Rivka, who tells him to go forward with this midah, alpi nevuah, and the goal that is to be attained here is that the continuation of the Jewish people should end up in the right hands, Yaakov's hands, and not Esav's hands. It is the worthiest of gold, and it comes from the highest authority. One could argue there is never another situation that will warrant using this midah. And therefore, Korach, in a sense, not only is it a perversion of the midah of Yaakov, it's the antithesis of the midah of Yaakov. For consider, what is the nature of Yaakov's deceit? He makes himself out to be Esav. To attain what? The Avodah. Now, what are those coordinates with Korach? What's the nature of Korach's deceit? He makes himself out to want the Avodah. To attain what? To be the Nasi. In other words, the Avodah, which for Yaakov is the goal, which in that highly controlled situation justified the mirmer saying is Esav, for Korach, Avodah itself becomes the ploy. It becomes the decoy. It becomes the red herring. And that, in a sense, is Chilul HaKodesh. It's a violation of Avodah that should be what he is deceitful over for something much less worthy, namely the Nasius. So it's a whole new dynamic to understand what it means that Yaakov asked that his name not be mentioned together with Korach. What he means to say is, this is not what I was doing. This is not what I represent, and I'm completely detached from it, and it from me. What's fascinating is just the final point, once we understand why Yaakov is deleted from Parshas Korach, we then further understand why he is yes mentioned in Divrei HaYomim, even as an exception. Why? Because Divrei HaYomim describes the family of Levi in the Beis HaMikdash. Now you can mention Yaakov, because that's really what you got from Yaakov. That is the legacy of Yaakov, the Avodah that was the result of his Mirma, not the Mirma itself for other less noble results. So this is a very interesting insight into the well-known Rashi, why not Yaakov, and certainly a lot to think about in terms of the Midah of Mirma, how in one person's hand under certain conditions it can be the result of the future of the Jewish people, and for someone else, it was the end. Now, Chazal have a different way of relating to the word vayikach. You see, what's interesting about the word vayikach in Parshas Korach, if one keeps something of an eye on grammar, is that the pasuk has no object. It has many subjects, but it doesn't say what they took. It just says who the takers were. Vayikach Korach, and Dathan and Aviram, and Omer Peles, and that's the end of the pasuk. But what did they take? We don't know. Now, there's a well-known medrash which says that Korach actually, he brought his 250 men and he came to Moshe with a question. Because he dressed them in garments made completely of tchelis. And he asked, these garments, are they obligated in the mitzvah of tzitzis or not? The answer is, yes, a four-cornered garment is obligated in tzitzis. Korach, of course, makes a joke about that. He pokes fun at it and says, a normal garment can be taken care of by one thread of tchelis. So if the entire thing is made of tchelis, so then certainly it shouldn't need tzitzis. It's fascinating that in order to bring out the point, he makes a show of putting garments completely of tchelis on the 250 men. That means someone somewhere spent a long time putting together these garments. Now, the logic of the question doesn't change whether or not they're wearing them, but the effect of the question changes. Eino dome shmir l'ri'ia. You can't compare a theoretical discussion to bright blue on 250 people. All of a sudden, it's a different type of atmosphere. Now, what's fascinating about this medrash is that on the one hand, It's not the pshat of the pasuk. I mean, the pasuk doesn't talk about tzitzis. But on the other hand, it actually answers a question that the pshat cannot answer. And that often happens with the medrash. That is to say, sometimes the medrash takes the form of outside information that we just happen to know. We have a mesorah. But sometimes the medrash can be used to address pshat questions that do not have pshat answers. And here's a case in point. The pasuk says, "Vayikach Korah." You have a subject. What did he take? Pasuk doesn't say. Well, what's the rule? Whenever the pasuk mentions someone taking something, there is no object, but it's clearly there. How do we know what the reference is to? The grammatical rule is, go back to the most recently mentioned object. Well, let's try and do that, but we're at the beginning of Korach. Where will the most recently mentioned object be? It will be at the end of Parsha Shelach. And the end of Parsha Shelach is the mitzvah of tzitzis. And therefore, this is the root within the pasuk whereby the final parsha of Shelach is the mitzvah of tzitzis, vayikach Korach. What did he take? He took the mitzvah of tzitzis. Now, the question is, if one can imagine that there could be any number of mitzvahs that Korach could have asked his Korach-type questions about. Every mitzvah will have its issues, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's seichel and our seichel are not the same. Kilo makshivo sam makshivo seichel. But Korach, as far as this medrash is concerned, he made a beeline for the mitzvah of tzitzis. What is it about the mitzvah of tzitzis that bothers Korach so much? Or why is that the target of his question? That's an interesting shaila. And the Chida explains. The background to the mitzvah of tzitzis. What came immediately before the Parsha of Tzitzis? Well, as we know, in the end of Shelach, is the Parsha of the Mekoshesh that we spoke about last week. The one who was doing whatever he was doing on Shabbos. Carrying wood, gathering wood, picking wood. Now, the Medrash tells us, as we mentioned last week, that the Mekoshesh, his intentions were Lashem Shamayim. That is to say, the Jewish people felt, it's all finished. The mitzvahs are for Eretz Yisrael, but we're not going into Eretz Yisrael. We're out of play. And therefore, the rules don't apply to us anymore. And therefore, the Mekoshesh, on his own flesh, demonstrated that the mitzvahs are absolutely a requirement. They're a universal requirement. And he gave his life for that. Immediately after that section is the mitzvah of tzitzis. What the mitzvah of tzitzis therefore represents is to emphasize and reinforce this idea that the mitzvahs apply under all circumstances. In other words, no sooner has the Mekoshesh sacrificed himself, so to speak, to demonstrate that the mitzvahs still apply, there is no greater way to emphasize that than presenting another mitzvah. If the mitzvahs don't apply to the Jewish people, why should they get another one now? Because they do apply. And they always will. Which means that there's something about the mitzvah of tzitzis that represents the concept that the keeping of mitzvahs as a matter of principle are universal. And that explains to us why the parsha of tzitzis concludes by a reference to leaving Mitzrayim. As we know, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Hotzeiti Eschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim Liyos Lachem Lelukim. What is the place of this reference? The information we know, how does it take its place within the mitzvah of tzitzis? Here the pasuk is stating that the foundation for the fundamental requirement to keep mitzvahs is leaving Mitzrayim. If you left Mitzrayim, you're in. If you got to Eretz Yisrael, better. But if you didn't, you're still in. Yetzias Mitzrayim, that is to say, culminating with Matan Torah, that's the basis for fulfillment of mitzvahs. Torah is mitzvahs without borders, fundamentally. And what's very interesting is, Rashi, in the end of Parsha Shelach, as he does every once in a while in Chumash Bamidbar, he goes on an excursion through the words of Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan. And Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan links every aspect of the mitzvah of tzitzis to Yetzias Mitzrayim. The mitzvah of tzitzis applies to a garment of four corners, says Rabbi Moshe Darshan, corresponding to the four expressions of geula, the four stages of geula. Hotzeisi, vitzalti, vika'alti, velokachti. Moreover, says Rabbi Moshe Darshan, the place to put the tzitzis is referred to as al kanfei vikdehem. The last time we saw the word kanfei is when we left Mitzrayim. Vaisoeschem al kanfei nisharim. It's very interesting. Kanfei for a beged means the corner, but they really are the flaps or the wings. And it's reminiscent of, representative of, kanfei nisharim, the way we left Mitzrayim. Furthermore, says Rabbi Moshe, there are eight strings on the tzitzis, and they correspond to the 8 days from when we began to leave Mitzrayim, which is actually from when we brought the Korban Pesach, on the 14th of Nisan, until Kriyas Yamsuf, until Shiras Az Yashir, on the 21st of Nisan. Those 8 days are embedded in the eight strings. Rashi also says, and this actually makes things a little complicated, is that the color of Tcheles, the chut of Tcheles, which is the one string, corresponds to Makas Bechoros. Because Rashi understands that Tcheles, unlike what we popularly call Tcheles, which is Dafka light blue, Rashi understands that Tcheles is actually a kind of a dark blue. And when one gets involved in the mitzvah of Tcheles, one has to reckon with the fact that there's three or four colors that it might possibly be. For Rashi, the dark blue of Tcheles, that midnight blue of Tcheles, corresponds to Chatzos of Makas Bechoros. Ad kedei kach. And therefore, what the mitzvah of tzitzis represents is the mitzvahs, all mitzvahs that are applicable, that are not tluyos ba'aret, are absolutely in play for the Jewish people, even here. And that's why what Korach is looking to do to undermine the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu, to remove, in a sense, his platform as the one who obligates them in Hashem's name in mitzvahs, he's looking to bring things back to the mindset as they were before the Mekoshesh, before the mitzvah of tzitzis. And that's why he attacks the mitzvah of tzitzis, as if to say, this mitzvah, it can't be, it's not logical. And the point is, not only the mitzvah of tzitzis, but also what it represents, namely, mitzvahs in general in our situation do not apply to us. To put it slightly differently, Korach is hoping that Moshe's entire platform will unravel with the mitzvah of tzitzis. And that's why Rashi quotes in the name of the Medrash that when Korach says, Ki kol ha'edot kulam kadoshim, we're all holy, so what do you need you for? Why are you lording over us? Madu etisnasu akal Hashem. Rashi says, we all heard Anochi velo yelecha. We all heard Hashem say, Anochi Hashem elokecha, the first two dibros. What does Korach mean by that? What he means is, apparently, what Hashem told us directly is what we need to know under all circumstances, in all situations. That's monotheism, that's okay. But beyond that, everything else that he may have said to you, that doesn't apply to us, so you have nothing to say to us anymore. That's what Korach is looking to do. And this explains how, in a sense, Dasan and Aviram, his partners in crime, they resonate with this. Because, as Moshe calls for them, as a conciliatory act to try and mend things a little bit, in Pasuk Yud Beis of Perek Tet Zayin, Vayishlach Moshe lekro ledosan ba'aviram b'nei Eliyav v'yomu lo na'aleh, he calls for them, they're not interested. They say, Hama'at ki helisonu me'eretz avas chalav u'dvash lamiseinu b'midbar. You took us up from a land of milk and honey, what a thing to say about Mitzrayim, to kill us in the desert. What does it mean to kill us in the desert? You didn't save us, as you always do. And they were going to die in the desert. And then they say, and you doubted, af lo el eretz zavas chalav udvash havir sanu. So you took us out from a perfectly good land, which would be justifiable if you brought us into a better good land. But you didn't. So we're nowhere. And because we're nowhere, this again is the theme of Korach. If we're nowhere, therefore you are no one. Because anything that you have to say is not binding. So this is a bit of further insight as to how far Korach was prepared to go, and the various, in a sense, positions that he's prepared to put forward. But really what he wants is anything that will undermine Moshe. What is he prepared to do? Whatever it takes. Undoing tzitzis, if need be. No mitzvahs, whatever. Even though, when we think about it, Korach may have ended up unraveling even more than he wanted to. Because at the end of the day, he wants to be the Nasi of the family of Kehas. What's the Yichus of Kehas? Well, they're very important in terms of the Mishkan. But where does the Mishkan come from? Who told you about it? Moshe. But you just told everyone not to listen to him. So that means that the fire of Machlokas, in a sense, what began, he couldn't stop it once it started. Because he's always compromising his own position. Because if everyone ends up not really caring that much about mitzvahs, so who's going to care? Who's the Nasi of Kehas? It doesn't mean anything anymore. But that's the price that one pays. Sometimes when it comes to machlokas, it's not always that easy to stop once it started. Sometimes it is the undoing of the people that started it in the first place, as we know. Now, after Dathan and Aviram's dismissal, really, to come and see Moshe, so Moshe reacts very harshly. If we look at the pasuk, it's quite something. It's never before, and never after, actually, does Moshe react in this way. In Perek Tes Zayin, Pasuk Tes Vav, Vayichala Moshe Me'od. Moshe was very angry, very upset, Rashi says. Vayomer Lashem Al Teifen El Minchasam. So just to read the Pasuk, he says, Al Teifen El Minchasam, do not pay any heed. Do not turn, pay any attention to their mincha, to their offering. Lo chamar echad mehem nasasi. I didn't take even a donkey that belongs to one of them. V'lo hari oses echad mehem. I've never wronged any of them. Now, what is the meaning when Moshe says, Al teifen el minchasam? Firstly, who is he talking about? Whose mincha should Hashem not turn to, not accept? Well, on a simple level, I mean, where is the mincha? Where's the if mincha is meant literally, we're not aware of any mincha here. Perhaps it means that a reference to the Keteres. After all, this time tomorrow, they're all set to bring the Keteres, and Moshe is saying, don't accept their Keteres. It's an amazing situation. Moshe is davening to cancel or counteract what might otherwise be a merit for someone. That's unique. I think in the Torah, normally one davens four things. But Moshe is... what would the situation look like if Moshe hadn't offered this prayer? Would Hashem, yes, have accepted their kedoras? We don't know. But Moshe davened that he shouldn't. Okay. The problem is, if it's a reference to Dathan and Aviram, who are the ones that have just spoken to Moshe, Dathan and Aviram don't really look set to bring any kedoras. They're never part of the competition because they never put themselves forward as being interested in the Avoda. The 250 men did, and Korach did, for a while. It's a question as to whether he actually went the distance there. Dathan and Aviram were never interested. And therefore, clearly, these words of Moshe al-Tefen al-Minchasam are not talking about Dathan and Aviram. They're talking about Korach's men generally. Do not pay heed to their mincha, referring to their ketores. But Rabbeinu Bachya says that actually, when Moshe uses the expression mincha, mincha sam, he means mincha in the literal meaning of the word. That is to say, a mincha is a meal offering. Now, there's no reference in the pasuk to any meal offerings. What is he referring to? Says Rabbeinu Bachya. Amongst these 250 men, it's very sad to talk about it, but Rashi says it, and it's from Chazal in the Medrash. There were 12 people there who had known better times. 12 of the 250 were the Nisiyim. Nisiyei Eda, the Pasuk says. And what they began in a very positive way, in a stellar way, but by the time, but they threw their lot in with Korach, and they met the end of Korach. Where is the mincha here? Al-Tefen al-Minchasam. Says Rabbeinu Bachya, the finest hour of these 12 Nesiim is when they came forward on the first 12 days of the running of the Mishkan, Chanukas HaMishkan. And as we know, each one volunteered, they came forth, and they brought their korbanos. It's the lane, it's Parshas Nosa, the laning for Chanukah, and korbanam karas kesef achas, 70 שקל בשקל לקודש, 30 מאה משקלה, מזרק אחד כסף, 70 שקל בשקל לקודש, שניהם מלאים סולס בלולה ושמן למנחה. The first thing each one of them brought was a mincha, and that represented the outstanding stature of these Nasiim at the time. Says Rabbeinu Bachya, Moshe is saying that should not outweigh what they're doing now. Al tefen el mincha sam, that mincha that they brought then should not help them here, because what they're doing here is too wrong. It's a very interesting interpretation of the pasuk. And I think perhaps there's room to add just a certain nuance. After all, is there any connection between these two things? Between their mincha at the time of Chanukah Mizbeach and what they're doing now with Korach? There is, I believe. Because the korbanos that the Nesiim brought on those first 12 days of the Mishkan, they were bought on behalf of their tribes, and moreover, they were brought with the entire Jewish people in mind. They were korbanos of unity. That, says the Medrash, is why they were particular not to deviate from each other's korban. As if to say, to preserve that cohesion, to preserve that unity, exactly what the first one brought, that's the subsequent 11 brought the same thing. Each one had their own specific kavanas, that may well be. But we see that they brought them with the unity of the tzibur in mind. And that's why those korbanos on those first 12 days had the status of a korban tzibur, even though they were brought by individuals. A korban of an individual doesn't override the Shabbos. But they started on Sunday and they did not break for Shabbos. Whoever brought the korban on day 7 brought it on Shabbos. And it was okay, because they had the status of a korban tzibur. And they were the nasi. The integrity of the position of a nasi is someone who has the tzibur in mind. However, without oversimplifying, it's very easy for the representative of a tzibur to stop representing the tzibur, and perhaps to think more about representing themselves. Power corrupts. And therefore what we're seeing in a sense with the placement of the 12 Nesiim amongst the congregation of Korach, they mishandled their Nesius. And in a sense, they were looking to advance themselves and leave the Tzibur behind. And therefore, they forfeit the outstanding merit of those menachos, of those meal offerings that they brought originally, which had the status of Korban Tzibur. Perhaps that is the connection between that mincha and Moshe's prayer now. And what does he say? Lo chamor echad mehem nasasi. I never took even a donkey from them. Or more correctly, I never even took a donkey from one of them, as Rashi says. And Rashi actually illustrates from the Medrash Tanchuma. Lo chamor shel echad mehem natalti. Afilu kashelachti mi Midyan le Mitzrayim. It's an amazing Rashi. Even when I originally took the trip from Midyan to Mitzrayim, v'kavti es ishtives banay ala chamor, I rode my wife and my sons on the donkey. V'hayali li tol osa chamor mishalahem. I should have claimed back travel expenses from them. I'm here on business. I'm here to save you. Well, I should pay for the donkey. What a thing to say. But I didn't do it. Why? So, and in a sense, that represents the nth degree of Moshe's dedication to the tzibur. If there was ever an expense to be paid, I'll pay the expense. My interest is only that the things be well for the Jewish people. Now, the question is, what exactly is this coming to explain? What exactly is this coming to justify? Moshe says, I'm right, they're wrong, and the way that I know that is because when I came on a donkey to them in Mitzrayim, I didn't charge them. How does this explain anything? And what's interesting is this is Moshe talking to Hashem. This is not Moshe remonstrating with Adas Korach. This is part of his tefillah. The first part is don't pay any attention to them because they're in the wrong. I'm in the right, and I know I'm in the right, because I've never taken anything from them. What exactly does that mean? There is a fascinating explanation of this Rashi in the writings of Rav Zev Freind, Shlita, a sefer called Shabbos u'Mo'adim. And then again, we have to understand Korach, who knows more than all of us put together, and he still made a terrible mistake. And people believed him. What exactly is Korach saying? Korach says that the appointments of Moshe, it sounds like, he had no business appointing the son of Tzaph and Menuziel, and maybe not even appointing his brother Aaron. I mean, that's from him. He has no notion that Moshe is a Navi. I mean, they're aware of Nevi'im. That's it. He's made it up. It could be that it's a bit more nuanced than that. Rabbi Shmuel Diskin has a classic explanation of what the Gemara means when it says, it compares the Nevuah of Moshe to the other Nevi'im. It's the Gemara Yevamos and Daf Memtes. And there it says, enigmatic words, Kol ha-Nevi'im nisnabu ba'aspaklaria she'ena me'ira. All other Nevi'im, their prophecy came through an unclear lens, sounds like, or a non-bright lens, a dimmed lens. And Moshe's Nevuah came through aspaklaria me'ira. It's completely bright and clear. What does this mean? It's obviously a very delicate thing to say. And Rabbi Shmuel Diskin explains that the Navi receives his Nevuah through the medium of his neshama, through his soul. That's the faculty which allows him to receive the message. Every Navi has a certain personality, and that will be part of his soul. Which means it will be part of his Nevuah. Now that doesn't compromise the accuracy of what he's saying, but it does give a certain color or atmosphere. It gives a very simple mashal, but if you look at something through a blue lens, you can describe everything that you see through that, but it all looks blue. And this is why the Gemara says in Sanhedrin in the 10th Perek that Ein shnei neviim misnabim misignon echad. You'll never have two neviim talking exactly the same way. And the meaning is, the point is, even if they receive the same nevuah, they won't say it in the same way, because each one has a different neshama. And in fact, says Rabbi Shmuel Leib Diskin, we've mentioned this in the past, this is really what's behind Bilam's plan to go and curse the Jewish people, which really needs to be understood. Bilam was also no fool. And he knows that Hashem himself has told him, you cannot say anything that I tell you not to say. You can only say the messages that I give you. And Bilam says, okay, and he goes. Why does he think that won't be true? How does he think that he'll be able to succeed in cursing the Jewish people? The answer, says Maral Diskin, is very simple. Bilam knows how Nevuah works. Nevuah goes through the Navi system. Ah. Well, if you ever saw Bilam's system, so you'll know that nothing can get through Bilam's neshama, regardless of what it looked like going in, that won't come out sounding like a curse. There are people who are non-prophets who are capable of doing that. Something positive comes in, goes out negative. And as far as they're concerned, that's exactly what they heard. Because they're negative. And therefore the corruption of Bilam, he had outstanding confidence in his moral depravity. Which means the way that Nevuah is expected to work, he says, Hashem, send me your greatest blessings. They'll come out as the worst curses. So what happened in the end? The Pasuk says, Vayosem Hashem dovar b'fi Bilam. Hashem put words into Bilam's mouth. Namely, he circumvented his system. Bilam's system cannot be trusted with Nevuah. You wouldn't wish your worst enemy to have Bilam to say brachas to them. And therefore the whole thing was circumvented. He was given a script, much to his chagrin and mortification. But by then it was too late. In fact, Rav Shach Zatzal in the Sefer Aviezri uses this concept of the Maral Diskin to answer a very interesting question. One of our greatest merits, we talk about it constantly, is Akedat Yitzhak. What Avram was prepared to do for Yitzhak, it's the centerpiece of Zichronus and Rosh Hashanah, and we talk about it every day. Except, says Rav Shach, when you think about it, listen, it must have been difficult to do. But there's no two ways about it. In other words, when Hashem told Avram that he's got to take Yitzchak and kill him, so that doesn't make it easy, but what's the alternative? To defy Hashem? Where is the outstanding merit of Avram for doing what ultimately he must have had to do? The answer is, says Rav Shach, how does Avram know that he's meant to kill Yitzchak? Even when you read the Pasuk, it's a little bit vague. V'haleyu sham la'ola, bring him. That could mean anything. And when he's meant to take him down, and he says, well, wasn't I meant to kill him? The Pasuk says, no, just meant to take him up. And that's when we have words in front of us. Kal v'chomer, as the nevuah is projected onto Avram. The greatness of Avram is that he had the objectivity and he had the purity to hear that message and not to divert it to something more benign or other. That's where the greatness is. Because if his self-interest was in play, he could have heard the message, but it would have come out sounding something like Give Yitzhak an Aliyah or something like that. So to be able to hear that forthrightness, that equanimity really, that's the greatness of Avram. And he was prepared to, he knew what he'd heard. And there was no misinterpreting. That's the greatness of the Akedah. And in fact, Rabbi Shlomo Eger, that's the son of Rabbi Kiva Eger, in the introduction to his Sefer Gilyan Marsha, explains, it's fascinating, I think we've mentioned this a while ago, but the things that we hear the whole time, and to stop and think about them, the bracha that we make before the Haftorah, Asher Bachar Bin Yim Tovim, V'ratzav Divrehem Aneh Marim Be'emes. So what does the bracha mean? Hashem chooses good neviim, v'ratzav divrehem, and he accepts or he likes their words, v'ratzav divrehem aneh marim be'emes. Says Rav Shlomo Eger, I should think he likes their words. He's the one that gave them to them. So what does that mean? Hashem gives a message to Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu then communicates it, and Hashem hears it and says, oh, I like it. Of course you like it. You told it to him. It's a good China. Says Rav Shlomo Eger, it means this. If they weren't Nevi'im Tovim, then what they said would not be what Hashem originally said to them. That's why a Navi needs to perfect his midos as well as his intellect before he can receive Nevuah. Because he has to vanquish and set aside self-interest so that he's dedicated to the truth. So when Hashem gives them a message and he then communicates it, if he's a Navi Tov, Asher Bachar Bin Yimim Tovim, Hashem says, I'm happy with that. That's a good rendition of what I said. That's true. That's faithful to what I said. It's wonderful. That's the bracha before the Haftarah. Says Rav Zev Freund, Acharei Hadvarim Ha'ele. This is what Korach is saying about Moshe. Korach is not saying that Moshe is not a Navi. Korach is saying, listen, you may be a Navi, but isn't it interesting how Hashem has communicated Nevuah to you, and the result is your brother became the Kohen Gadol, and then your favorite nephew became the Nasi of Gehaz. Doesn't that mean perhaps that, I'm not saying you're not a Navi, but maybe there's something in play here which you received that message and interpreted it as if to say that Aaron should be the Kohen, and Eltzafan should. That's a very difficult thing to respond to, because the one who's being attacked, all they have is their perception. Which means if they say, I think I said the right thing, that may be part of the problem, because Korach is saying, yes, I know you think you said the right thing. I'm saying maybe you shouldn't have thought that. How can Moshe know? That's the charge of Korach. Maybe there was a smidgen of self-interest, and lo and behold, your brother's the Kohen Gadol. So how does Moshe know? To this Moshe says, I know that I'm right. If I had any self-interest, I would have to doubt myself. But I know that my interest lies 100% with the Jewish people. And how is it seen? To the nth degree. Even on something so small, lo chamor echad mehem nasasi, I've never taken anything from them. I've never used my position in any way to my advantage or to my somehow material gain. So I know that I'm clear. And because that's true, I know that everything I've said is right, and that's why I proceed on the course. A fascinating explanation of what Moshe means to say. This is really he needs to work out whether he has faithfully, now that he's been attacked in this way. And the answer is, I can honestly say, looking back for the months and years that I've known the Jewish people, my track record shows that it is in the interest of the Jewish people, and so do these as well. And so, the downfall of Korach, at the end of the day, came over an issue of kavod, which is very easy to talk about. But what's interesting is, how exactly do we relate to the concept of kavod, of honor, and of respect? Kavod is not the enemy. There's no such thing, my father, Olav Shalom, said often, there's no such thing as a bad midah. Or a good midah. A midah is a measure. Depends where and how much and how. Because the truth is that kavod is the basis of Torah. A person needs to be mechubad. A person needs to act with dignity. But it can be abused. Why does a person need to act with dignity? Because every person carries within them something highly dignified, highly respectable, highly noble. Neshama tahora. They should have self-respect, and they should respect others as well. Everyone is B'Tselem Elokim. And in fact, one of the words in Lashon HaKodesh for a soul is kavod. Ura kavodi. Lemani zamecha kavod. That means, Adar HaPshat, that means the soul. Because it's the soul within a person that's the source of their respect. And they should respect themselves. So how can a person take a wrong turn? If the basis of a person's kavod is their soul, then as long as they are acting in accordance with the dictates of the soul, that respect is channeled to a proper place. Should they seek to divert it and for it to be self-serving, so that's a violation of the idea of kavod. That's the type of kavod that can take a person out of the world. And therefore, a person needs to respect themselves, because that respect is the basis of a higher cause. The perversion of that is when a person says, I am the higher cause, and all respect is then due to them per se. And it's interesting, as Yaakov is looking to disassociate himself from Adas Korach, which is really a violation of kavod, an abuse of kavod, he says, Bekahalam al techad kavodi. He uses that word kavod for his soul. It means soul, just like he says, Besodam al-tavo nafshi, those two parallel, nafshi and kavodi. But the point is, I don't even wish the concept of kavod to be associated with that, because they're taking kavod to a place that it should never go. And what's very interesting is, this gives us further insight as to why Korach seems to have a terrible relationship with the mitzvah of tzitzis. He's looking to attack the mitzvah of tzitzis. Because tzitzis is about this. The tzitzis come on the corners of a garment. And a person's clothing, we see in the writings of Chazal, and in Halacha even, clothing are a source of kavod. The Gemara says in Shabbos Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, Rabbi Yochanan used to call his clothes mechabdusi. He wouldn't refer to them as my garments. He'd call them my honorers. Because clothes give respect to a person. And there are halachas learned from this. There's a mitzvah to wear special clothes for Shabbos. It's a mitzvah from the Navi. The pasuk says in Yeshayah, v'chibadato. V'chibadato me'asos t'rachecha, says the Gemara, v'chibadato means respect the Shabbos. How do you respect the Shabbos? By wearing nicer clothes. That's mechabdim. The question is, a person wears nice clothes to promote kavod. To what end? Says the Torah, on the corners of your garment should be tzitzis. and what's tied to the corners of your garment means that this kavod should be tied into something higher. What the tzitzis represent, and the tcheles, the kisei hakavod, the whole thing. And that's why, in a sense, the mitzvah tzitzis is the antithesis of what Korach is looking to do. Korach wants clothes, pardon the expression, no strings attached. He doesn't want the mitzvah of tzitzis, because he doesn't wish to have to take the concept of kavod that he's looking to develop as an end unto itself, and to have to channel it to something higher. He wants to be the something higher, and that was his undoing. And this is something which is true not only for Korach. Everyone has this. Anyone who's in a position where they have a certain status of respect, the achrayus of respect is to always channel it towards something higher. The nisayon of respect is to try and divert it to the personal account. That's a nisayon for everyone, not just for Korach. The biggest tragedy for Korach is not only that he's buried under the ground, but his lessons remain buried in Parshas Korach, because they're true for everyone the whole time. There is a concept in Halacha, one always gives primacy to what's called inyone diyoma, right? Topical matters. Hilchos Pesach with Pesach, Hilchos Sukkos with Sukkos. The Prima Godim states that Parshas Korach is in Yonah Diyoma the whole year round, every day. Because the art of avoiding an abusive kavod and the art of avoiding machlokas, that's Maisim Mechol Yom. So these are some of the lessons to be learned from Parshas Korach. Certainly a great deal to reflect upon. We'll leave it over there for this evening.